It's actually Mobile in the middle because there's a Trip in Vain ticket that I had to rebook for some time.
So just going to Mobile to go to Mobile, as one does.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 549 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Mr. Foz Mamoon and Seth Miller. How you doing, gentlemen?
Good morning. Good morning.
You guys, Seth, you have your water to drink. Foz, you got some coffee?
I have some coffee.
We're gonna jump right into Atmos.
I'm concerned that you think I don't day drink anymore.
I mean, you've gotten older. I kind of just know.
Yeah, I did do. Ironically, I was day drinking Friday morning and completely destroyed my day. So
see, I know you like your midday siesta, and day drinking would push that timeline up. So
yeah.
Atmos, quite possibly the worst frequent flyer program name ever, but it's Alaska's new frequent flyer program.
You fly into the atmosphere.
Oh God. Yes. Yes. Okay. Let's just talk about it. So they launched this. They're basically replacing the tiers with Atmos names. I think it's silver, gold, platinum, titanium.
Yep. This is the new merge program. So this is what they've been threatening us with for some time since the merger with the airline.
Can we be very clear? When the merger was announced, they said they would combine the programs and replace it, and it was going to be an all new program. And one of the conditions was explicitly said, when you launch a new program, the value of the points can't go down. So we've known a new program is coming for a long time. The number of people are like, oh my God, they launched a new program. What a surprise. Baffles me. And I guess it's because being surprised is a great way to attract attention. Like, wow, this crazy thing just happened, even if we've known about it for basically a full year now. But okay, as you were, where were we?
Yep. So they launched the program. It's getting hard sold to us right now by everybody. But it's basically the exact same program that it was before, with a few caveats. The two top tiers, so platinum and titanium, require, I think it's 10,000 more miles or elite points. That's the first change. They're going to status points as the currency for earning status, which are miles, but they've given you now three ways to earn that status. You can choose to go with distance, so how much you've flown. You can choose to go with spend, so there's a conversion. I think it's every dollar is three status points. Or you can go with 500 mile segments, 500 point segments. So if you fly a bunch of short haul, you can earn 500 points for each segment you fly.
You have to pick one.
You have to pick one every year.
Yeah, you can do it once every 365 days.
And if you don't pick one the first year, it defaults to spend. Awesome system.
Hold on. Is it really that bad? It gives customers flexibility in how to qualify.
That's true. It's true. Okay. You're right. You're right. Or how not to qualify, because no one really knows what they're doing. I mean, unless you're one of us. Do people really know?
Maybe. I mean, look, if you do predominantly short haul, up and down the West Coast.
Alaska. You're in Alaska. You're in Hawaii.
Yeah. There's probably plenty of people who do qualifying segments, so they know.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's probably people who spend a lot and feel like they're not at the tier that they should be at, given their spend, because they just don't do enough miles or enough segments.
Yep.
So, I mean, generally, most of the people know what they're doing to an extent. Yep. They know where they fall. So it gives people some flexibility. To be fair, I will give Alaska credit. They didn't just go straight out revenue, period, like everyone else says.
Yep.
They're giving people options.
Yeah. I mean, they are. And I think they kind of know, maybe they know the general feeling of potential customers, like what people are going to choose overall. Like, they know that a lot of people are going to tend to go with distance and short segments. So anyway, let's talk a little bit more about the details. So for platinum, it's now 85,000 miles points to get to platinum, up from 75,000. And then for titanium, which used to be MVP gold 100K, it is now 135,000 status points per year, which I think the first year, Fuzzy, you said they're given a 20,000 point head start for that. Is that if you're already a titanium?
Yes. if you're already at Titanium, you get, I think, 20 at 100K and 10 at 75K or Platinum, whatever you want to call it.
So the math comes out to for those 135,000 points, if you do spend, it's about 27,000 USD spend to get to 135K, which it aligns with United for 1K for their highest published tier. It's a lot of money, though, to be an Alaska flyer, I think, unless you're doing tons of transcons in first.
And you do have the Hawaiian Asian network now, too.
True.
Presumably some people are paying for the forward cabin there.
Yeah.
But the question, like one of the things that I struggle with this whole rollout, right? There's a lot of information that's unknown, and I think they prematurely rolled it out.
Yeah, and
do you think they don't know, or do you think they just haven't shared it?
I think they don't know yet.
Like what?
How's all the revenue going to get reconciled if you go revenue? Like, is it just going to be AS ticket stock? Because then who's ever going to really qualify? The number of people who are ever really going to qualify is so small.
Well, I think that's the key that Seth pointed out in our chat, is if it's a non-Alaska ticket, you get distance earning.
But even if you're on revenue, though?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Just like today.
So how are people actually going to...
Right, Boss, that's the same as how like United does it for points if you're flying on a non-JV partner.
Absolutely, but the difference here is, right, if you choose... So you're saying like they do some sort of conversion based on the cost of the ticket?
No. I think it's just at least give you straight distance and class of service.
Distance class of service, yeah.
So how does that count towards status then?
If it does today, you get the status points, right? The conversion is at dollars. So if you fly,
okay. Do the conversion.
Well, but let's say you choose dollars as your status qualification, and you spend $1,500 a week on whatever on them. But if you fly a partner ticket, a BA, for example, and you spend $1,000, they don't even see the revenue. They just look at, oh, you flew from Portland to London in J class, which earns at it earns at 125% for the miles flown. And that comes out to 8,000 status points or whatever it is, 9,000 status points. You just get 9,000 status points. That's it.
So like the other thing that I thought of was when they first rolled it out, there's no information on what happens when you fly partner airlines on partner tickets if you do the mileage based.
Yeah, it's not clear. Like it's
not broadly broadcasted, but it was written in that FAQ page that we found. It's written down.
But they're not being very transparent. And it was something Cranky posted that pointed out that you still get the class of service bonuses and what have you.
Yeah.
The only thing you end up, it seems like what they're retreating on is 027 issued tickets, all the bonuses you got with that.
Mm-hmm. So it's not, explain.
So today, if you book an AA ticket, if you book a ticket all on AA metal, but through Alaska, you get much more miles than you would if you bought a AA ticket straight as AA. So as an example, if you buy a cheap economy ticket, book through Alaska, you'll get 100%. If you book it through AA, you only get 25%.
All right, this is Steven's complaint that he can never find Qatar or anyone else on the Alaska website.
Correct. So now it seems like those bonuses are going away, at least as I read it. Moving forward, so it'll just be the whatever the carrier bonuses are.
I don't know. I don't think so. So to be fair, they didn't post the 26 like earnings potential until like 3 days after they posted the whole thing. So I think that's why a lot of people haven't seen it, because they looked at the stories and then they ignored it, and now it's been posted. So they now have it. The class of service bonuses are still there. If you book through Alaska, so you still get 250% on partners if it's in a J cabin, etc. If you book it through Alaska.com,
it'd be nice if those easy to find.
Yeah, it's not easy. So like book with Alaska, you have to go to like book with Alaska. You go to Atmos, you go to book with Alaska. Where did I find it here? Hang on. You're right, Foss. It's not like they've created this like weird sub website that doesn't. You earn points. Let's see.
It's earn points, partner flights. My point is it hasn't changed. So, okay, they didn't explicitly broadcast, but it hasn't changed. So I'm not as mad that like they didn't reiterate it.
And that's fine. But it wasn't also clear that it didn't change. right? It's clear that they rushed this through because day one they announced this program. The mileage tracker wasn't even working in your account. It worked in the app, but not on the website. It was a day or two later that it showed up. To Steven's point, they posted more information 3 days later. Like, why couldn't you have just done, you've had all this time. Why couldn't you just do this before you launched?
I agree with that. It's kind of feels half baked. Back to my point, they still have 25, 24. I think I could only get it to show 26 when I was on my phone, like on the mobile site. So there's definitely some goofy stuff. As part of this as well, they launched a new credit card or set of credit cards, I guess. And they're not that compelling. I mean,
but you wouldn't think that based on the bloggers.
So it's a 100,000 point bonus for $6,000 of spend in the first, I think it's 6 months, maybe it's 3 months.
Yeah.
90 days. Yep.
That's the premium card. That's the $400 card.
That's the $400 card. That card is now, let's see, what does it have? It has, you get 8 lounge passes. 2 per quarter. They expire at the end of the quarter, so you have to use them in that quarter. You get, I think you get 8 Wi-Fi passes, again, 2 per quarter. They expire at the end of the quarter. You get pre-check or global entry credit for $120. You get free check bags, which is on standard on other cards. But then you get per $1 spent on eligible dining, you get 3 points. So eligible dining, foreign transactions, and Alaska and Hawaii purchases. That's semi-compelling, right? If you're overseas, to use this as your foreign currency card, I guess. That's kind of nice. Yeah, and then you get a 25,000 point global companion award card on your card anniversary. So you get 25,000 points after, you basically get a free domestic award one way. Is it one way? Round trip.
25,000 points. Up to 25,000 points on a companion award ticket, but it's only on a companion, so it's got to be a plus one. You can't just use it directly.
Yeah. And then you can earn a 100,000 point global companion award after spending $60,000 or more on purchases in a year, in a card anniversary year, 365 days. Also, you have to, it's a plus one. So, like, that I find the least compelling part of this. Like, everybody's like, oh, it's amazing. I'm like, eh.
You know, Stephen, people used to celebrate the incredible value of getting partner award tickets on the OnePass program to Australia.
I'm done. Signing off, boys.
Sorry, listeners. That is a deep cut. That's probably a 20-year-old joke. And yeah, I went there.
And Stephen's the center of it. So.
Oh, my God.
Well, we actually should just end the episode. I don't think it's going to get any better than that, at least for us. No, listen, the companion awards are interesting. Maybe good, maybe bad, but at least it's interesting as something different and, you know, trying to be unique. The bonus points for foreign transactions and dining purchases, they're not the only ones who have done something like that. But again, I think it's, especially the foreign transaction stuff, like, it's nice to try to put some bonus there.
Yeah.
And try to sort that out, or, you know, encourage that stuff. Also, like, up to, the first, you get 10,000 status points by spend. Am I reading this right? Status point for $2 spent, so 20,000 points equals Atmos silver.
Yeah.
60,000 gets Atmos gold.
Yeah.
Like, direct spend to status. Like, JetBlue historically had been the U.S. airline that had made that just a general thing. Others have some credits towards it, but not at reasonable levels, really.
So wow. for top status, you need to spend 66,000 dollars.
Can you 232?
No, that's not right. 232. Yeah, you're right. 232 or so thousand to get top status. If you're going to spend that much money and you fly Alaska and you're like, I don't know if I'm going to be on Alaska plane that much. I guess you could do it that way or some mix. I mean, that is a plus of the card.
Yeah, and I don't think that many people are going to get to top tier straight that way. I will say my read on this is that similar to JetBlue's, you can combine spend and travel to status pretty well.
Yep.
And all of them do it in some way, but I feel like the newer approaches are more flexible on that.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they didn't give a bonus for the status point earning if you book, like if you use it for an Alaska purchase. Like, maybe it's two status points per dollar, or, you know, 1-to-1 if you get a Alaska ticket. They could have done that, and that might have been a little bit more compelling, but then, you know, you're kind of doubling up on your earning potential with that.
Yeah. That's 3 points per dollar on Alaska and Hawaiian purchases. So.
Well, that's not status points. That's just points. Like,
oh, I see what you're saying.
Miles. Yeah, yeah.
We didn't talk about the free upgrades on international flights for a top tier.
Oh, yeah. How's that going to work?
I mean, that's promising. They're not, like, if you're a top tier elite, they're not going to, if there's a seat up front, they're going to give it to you.
Mm.
And your companion.
That's not shabby. Like, it's better than the seat going empty or
room revving. True. Yeah. I mean, Tokyo, I mean, I guess even on the Hawaii network, that's kind of nice, right? If you're willing to connect through Hawaii and use that, then yeah, that's good.
I'm sure there'll be seats up front on Rome and London.
Yeah, maybe.
I can't imagine with the rates they're charging. I don't think anyone's going to pay those.
Yeah, I don't know. That's another thing. I don't understand how they're charging some of the fares they're charging on some of these routes. They are
8-9 months away, guys. They're not charging. Those aren't the rates they expect to carry.
Yeah, but even if you look at Tokyo today,
Tokyo and Seoul today are insane. Like, they're nuts. Like $10,000 in business class. That's insane
for a substandard product.
Yeah. Oh, Seth is looking it up.
There was a Starlink announcement. Was that part of all this, or did they just happen to coincide time-wise?
I think they just threw it all in together.
Yes and no. It is sort of related in that it's going to be linked to having an account. So you'll log in with your Atmos account on the newer planes as they get installed. Basically, the Hawaiian metal that Darty has installed, they won't change for a while, but the new Alaska planes, as they get installed, you'll have to log in using your credentials. And, you know, whatever. It's sort of like how United does it now. To get online. So it is related. This is another one that a little bit surprising, but, you know, they had signed on with Intelsat, which is now owned by SES, to put the satellite system on their regional jets. And they were supposed to be the first to install it. And then the merger happened, and then they were no longer the first to install it. And there were a lot of reasons talked about, but one of the never talked about, but often grumbled sort of versions was, well, the folks at Alaska saw how good it works on Hawaiian and what the price point was and couldn't come up with an excuse not to switch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to their credit, the folks at Intelsat kept saying, no, we still have a signed contract. We still have a signed contract, right up until the point that they didn't.
I mean, how does that, so is this going to be all mainline, the entire mainline fleet?
They're going fleet-wide eventually.
Even the E-175s?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Why 75s go first?
Is that just because they're easier?
It's because the GoGo network that they work on today is going to disappear on May 8th is the new date. It was originally end of this year. It's been extended. There is a report out saying that some of the planes will not be done by then. I think some of the old 73Gs are also still on the ATG system.
Gotcha.
I'm a little surprised they can't get the 50 RJs converted that fast. Like United's doing 5 or 6 a week at this point. So it shouldn't be that hard, except that you got to ground the airplanes.
Mm.
And United's gotten it down to, I think, a 3-day or 4-day install. So you'd think to get the, I think it's just under 50 planes converted, they could get it done by April, May timeframe. But at least for now, they're saying maybe not.
I mean, I think with Alaska, the challenge is so much of the route network is E-175s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like even rotating those through the Horizon ones, maybe a little easier, but the SkyWest ones, geez, I don't know. It's just an aside topic there. So when Foz and I took the Johannesburg to Sydney flight, and then I took Sydney to DFW, I didn't realize, like, I don't think either one of us realized, Qantas doesn't have Wi-Fi on any of their long-haul fleet except the A330s.
Yeah, I could tell you that.
You could have told us that?
Yeah.
That would have been good to know. Like, we, like, stepped on the one flight, we're like, well, I guess we're not talking to anybody for the next 12 and a half hours. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe it's just that A380 just didn't have Wi-Fi. Nope. Next one, no Wi-Fi.
They've announced that they're going to be adding Wi-Fi to the rest of their fleet. But Qantas was actually one of the earliest Wi-Fi players. They put, admittedly, an underpowered system, but they put a system on their 747s that were flying between Australia and the United States. And it was expensive. This was a long time ago. It was expensive. It barely was sufficient for, you know, what we would consider messaging today in terms of total capacity. And there's a lot of people on board, but they had it. And they found that the take rates were abysmal in part because it was expensive and barely work, in part because flights between the US and Australia are basically overnights both ways. Yeah. Most people just slept. And so they uninstalled it. And then fast forward a few years, they put there's the Viasat system on their domestic fleet. And that was in part with tied to the NBN, which is, I forget what it stands for, but it's the Australian National Broadband Network, maybe. Basically, the Australian government partially paid for a satellite to go in orbit that covered Australia. And Viasat helped launch and manage it. And that was also used for satellite service on the ground. And, you know, because it was cheaper and available and whatnot, they were able to put it into service for the planes. Since Starlink has become available in country, NBN usage has gone down, which is probably not what they expected to see. They're doing things to try to increase capacity and all those things, but it's a geo satellite, not LEO, so latency becomes an issue. And it's the capacity is lower. And so that's where sort of the Australia connectivity thing was in some ways tied to Australia, in some ways tied to just not having capacity over the Pacific, which even today, getting high capacity over the Pacific is really hard because it's not hard. Well, it's partially hard. It's probably just very expensive because no one wants to put capacity out there because fish don't pay for internet service.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, that's the difference. Though, is like United's done it. Delta, I think, has it.
They have service across the Pacific, but there's less capacity there in other parts of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like how, from a business perspective, why would anyone want to fly Qantas when there's other options with Wi-Fi? That's such a long flight.
Because it's overnight and not everybody is addicted to the internet.
Yeah, but even at 14 hours, even if it's overnight, you're not going to sleep for 12 hours.
No, you'll watch some movies and eat and, you know, read a book. Not everybody's addicted to the internet. Some people are okay with that.
Just surprising this day and age.
I mean, I'm surprised it seems like, I mean, I guess it's a cost issue, really.
Like, and they're moving in that direction. Don't get me wrong. But like take rates, even on airlines where it's free everywhere, like take rates are not 100%.
Yeah.
People don't spend their entire flights on the internet.
Yep.
Even I sometimes read a book instead of fucking around online.
I mean, I think for me, the big thing is like connectivity for family and stuff. Like being, I think that just having that option, even if it's like a messaging option only, is it's nice to have. I don't think it's a necessity. Like we survived. It was 28 hours. I didn't have internet. That's fine. It's just like one of those things of like, oh, we're diverting a la Kwajalein, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, when Foz and I diverted to Cape Town, I texted my wife from the air, like, hey, we're going to be in Cape Town instead of Johannesburg. We'll sort this out and we get on the ground. And just to let her know, because, I mean, Kwajalein, she didn't hear from us until we made it to Kwajalein and got inside for 20 minutes to have the Wi-Fi connection. And then didn't hear from me again until we landed in Guam. Yeah. So, anyway.
I mean, takes all types. My wife trusts that I'll get in touch when I need to.
Or she'll read about you on the news.
Seems grim.
I'm just saying, like that, you know. Anyway,
you know, she has access to my flight my flight plan. She knows where I'm supposed to be, but she'll send me a message and knows that I'll get back when I can.
If it's not on Google Calendar, my wife's like, oh, where are you?
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't put when the flight left and when it landed, she'd be like, and this is and it's in, you know, Australian time. Pff, no chance. I'm looking at that. So anything else about the Alaska program?
I mean, I want to. Yeah. One more thing. These communities.
Yes. Oh, the communities. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Like the Club 49 has been a longstanding program for a longstanding part of the Alaska Mileage Plan program, right? This is, if you're an Alaska resident, you get, I think it's like free check bags, even when other people don't, and a couple other benefits, right? They added a similar thing, Huakai by Hawaiian, I think, for Hawaii residents, right? Which is similar types of benefits, again, trying to make, you know, basically if you live there, you're making the program sticky for your locals. And so cool. But then they've added three more, I think. And it like, and they haven't named them, but it's like one's for families, one's for, you know, young single adults. And then I don't know what the other one was for, but like, they're like adventure travel or beach people or whatever. And like, it's like pick a community. It's self-selecting for targeted advertising, right? Yeah. Like at the end of the day, but it's interesting that they're sort of promising some benefit and value to people for doing this. So it'll be fun to see what comes from that.
It speaks to the point that Foz brought up earlier. It's kind of half baked because they didn't name them. They don't have details about what they are. There's exclusive benefits. I don't think Alaska really knows what those benefits are going to be. yet. Like, they know what Club 49 is and Huaqai, what those things are. Huaqai, maybe? I don't know. It's good. I think it's interesting that they're doing this, but it's also one of these things where they haven't figured it out. Right. At least that's how it feels.
One of the things that I come back to is, if they were going to do all this, why did they make the changes last year? It seems like a waste of time.
Like, all the changes about earning and trying to... I think they were trying to sort out how they were going to get everything together. Like, I think they were trying to simplify earnings, and now they've kind of simplified them, but they want to give you options.
But, like, I'm talking about the tier benefits, right? All that stuff. Like, why even bother doing all that stuff if you know you're going to reboot a lot of this stuff a year later?
But I think the tier benefits stay. Like, there's nothing specifically saying they go away.
Okay.
Like, I mean, that it's an unanswered question by Alaska. Like, do those stay?
That's my point. Like, this is my grander point, right? There's a lack of information.
Yeah.
And if they came out and said everything's going to stay the same except for these five things, that would have been great. But they haven't.
Hmm.
And while we're on the topic of Alaska, I'd like to go take someone out at their IT department for their new login stuff.
Oh, have they put in two-factor yet?
Not yet, but they've now moved to a third party for authentication. So it continues to de-authenticate you on the app and the website. And it's also a much bigger pain to log in because every freaking time there's a CAPTCHA, and half the time the CAPTCHA isn't right.
Yeah, or it doesn't work. It doesn't show anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to fix it. They need two-factor, or they need multi-factor is probably what they really should move towards. And they gotta come up with a better way of handling it, because the third party thing, and like, it kicks you out of the app to go log in to the third party. It's asinine. It's just dumb, and it doesn't look real. And yeah, and you've got people that are complaining about getting their accounts hacked and stuff. Like, fix it. Just fix it. This should be priority one. Anyway. What about Alaska vacations, Seth? What is the news there?
I don't know. You guys said last week you wanted to talk about it, and so I left it on the list.
Oh, well, I mean, I think we talked a little bit about Allegiant, and Alaska vacations is changing, right? Some of their destinations and things, they're killing off some routes that they were going to fly. I think one of those was St. Louis to, was it Cabo or something like Cozumel?
Kansas City lost one.
Kansas City lost one. But they're replacing those. So the vacations packages are changing, it seems like, and where Alaska flies with those is changing too, I think was the only reason I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that was those routes were basically subsidized, might not be the right word, but like, third party vacation company said, we'll buy X number of seats on each flight if you operate it. And so it basically stopped being an at risk service.
Okay.
They guaranteed purchases, and with that, and then they were allowed to sell the remaining seats, you know, on the open market. And so it was certainly less risky, maybe not completely cost covered, but it let them operate a lot of those sort of middle America to beach town places, often just once a week routes for the vacation package folks. And I don't know how much of it Alaska then also sold on its branded vacations package versus just, you know, regular people buying tickets and sorting their hotels on their own. But there was definitely a chunk of that. And then, yeah, the vacation companies like, hey, I guess no one really actually, we didn't sell enough seats on our Kansas City to Cancun or Cabo or whatever it was, Puerto Vallarta. So that one's going away.
Hmm.
And they moved it to somewhere else. I also think maybe it's a different vacation company now, but yeah.
I mean, we were talking a little bit about the Allegiant stuff with just their packages and, you know, closing properties and things. Is it a sign of like how things are going for packaged vacations, or is it just a fluke and this is just something Alaska's tweaking, or is it too early to tell?
I think more of the latter, right? So the Allegiant thing was they tried to build a ginormous hotel of their own and it was a debacle.
Yeah.
Their vacations packages program, cross-selling third-party hotels in Vegas or Florida otherwise, I'm in some other places, I'm sure, but that program is actually still running pretty strong.
Okay.
That's fine. They're pulling in decent, you know, ancillary revenue, getting their margin on those hotels, right? Like, JetBlue has stepped up its game in that market as well significantly. I will admit I've been booking more of my hotels through the JetBlue portal than Cashback or other. And you guys know I don't care about hotel status for the most part. So like, I don't worry about booking indirect.
Yeah.
And especially if it means I get airline status as a result, which JetBlue does for its portal bookings at basically the same rate as booking flights. That's a significant difference and value to me, at least in theory. If I finish this 25 for 25 thing and have Mosaic One for 25 years, I might care a lot less because I'm not going to want to re-earn 100 tiles. Like, that's the one thing about this is, like, the way they've written it up, I'm pretty sure it doesn't give you a shortcut to gold. It doesn't give you a shortcut to tier two. It just gives you a tier one.
Oh, I got you.
So not,
you don't start off early, or you don't start off ahead every year.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get your 50 credits towards whatever. excuse me. So anyway, but that's something that United, that was a huge part of their partnership that they signed with JetBlue, is United is going to adopt this sales program, this vacations package program, to sell hotels and rental cars to its airline, to its passengers.
Hmm.
And so I don't think that business is dying. If anything, I think the airlines are maybe almost sort of finally figuring out how to make it appealing. And to be fair, a big part of that is bribery. They are offering better benefits and bonuses and whatever to passengers. In my case, it's the tiles, the United, I imagine it'll be status related, American loyalty points, or the whatever the hell they call theirs. But right, you get your points for booking through those programs that count towards status. I think that is a major shift that the industry has seen. And yeah, I don't think that's going away, but I do think, you know, which routes will be worth it is has shifted a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, let's talk about your 25 for 25. Where are you at now?
I'm at 9.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I have a little ways to go there.
I have a little ways to go. I should be at 17. 16. I'm at 9. So I got time, though. I got till the end of the year. I think we talked about it. My first weekend where I was supposed to get 6, I crashed out. That's probably a terrible term to use. There was some weather, and I chose to not take the rest of the trips or take any of the trips. I came home after a couple hours at St. Logan. So that was what it was. I rebooked everything. I had 11 booked for a couple weekends ago. One of the segments was a 38-minute connection in Tampa. And if everything was on time, it would have been fine. Everything was not on time. We actually got on board. I was one of the last passengers to board because I was just traveling in the backpack and no need to spend extra time on an airplane when you're doing it 12 hours a day. And as I was walking on, the pilots walked off the plane.
I think he mentioned this, yeah.
Yeah, and like joking, I'm like, hey, don't we need you to get to Tampa? Like, not us. And we talked about this completely last week, how they did the whole swap.
We did, yeah.
Okay, so they did the whole swap, fine. I ended up 3 hours late into Tampa. The other plane went out on time. So I missed that. And instead I did a walk-up ticket, Tampa to Fort Lauderdale at dinner. But, that, you know, it's a lot of back and forth up and down the East Coast got me my 9. And I've got everything booked. I'm actually, the more I look at it, though, the less excited I am about 7, 8, 9 o'clock departures from Logan. I moved 2 hours away. And I mean, hour 8 is the fastest I've driven it, but that's parking lot to parking lot. So to get there for an 8 a.m. departure, especially if I don't want to leave a car parked for a couple of days, means the 4:30 a.m. bus from around the corner from my house. And that's very early.
Just day drink and then you can nap.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to nap anyways. But like I've got, I guess, the week this comes out, I'll have flown in theory to Cleveland and to Norfolk and back on a day trip from like 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. And so that one I can drive down and do it and it'll be okay. I've got another one that's a little earlier than I'd like, but this is one where originally I had planned to drive it. And now, because it was just an overnight, and now I actually have to extend it another day maybe. And so like, if my wife needs the car, I might end up having to take that 4:30 a.m. bus. But, you know, go to Wilmington in Miami, come back. I'm actually going to spend the night at a hotel in Boston instead of coming all the way back. Just hopefully timing is not worth it. And then fly to Nantucket and White Plains and take a Amtrak home. You know, fun things like that. And if everything's right, I'm actually have another one where I'm probably going to drop one of the segments. And so I'm going to have to rebook it. But if everything goes right, a weekend flying Boston to Syracuse to JFK to Buffalo to JFK to Raleigh to JFK to Detroit to JFK to Charleston to Atlanta to Orlando to Manchester. That's Thursday to Sunday should finish me.
Nice. I think the hardest part of this is like the requirement or not the requirement, but just like the complication of like an out and back that it's a pain.
Like if you so many of their routes are just out and back. So occasionally you get like both Boston and New York, but up here. And like, there are some airports, like over last weekend I did, or 2 weekends ago, I did Islip. And Islip has flights from Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, and something else, Tampa, probably.
Yeah.
And each of them is an out and back. And so if you take the first one in, I think what I did was Fort Lauderdale to Islip. I took the first one up, and then I just sat at Islip for 2 hours and waited until the next one came, and then flew back to Orlando. It was something like that. And so, you know, a lot of there's, and, but also like my Tampa thing, like that's, Tampa's a relatively big station for them. They fly to, like, to Providence from there. There are some where you get a little bit of additional option. Hartford gets a few different airports, but, for the most part, it's, yeah, it's a lot of out and backs. And
that's the part that would annoy me.
Yeah. And it's both a time and money challenge of like, okay, well, if I got to Providence, I could just rent a car and get back to Logan and do another, you know, somewhere else instead of flying all the way back down to Florida, right? Like, which one of those makes more sense? And if you can get a one-way rental car cheap and then hop something else out of Logan, that actually is probably better. That's obviously a whole different set of risks, but, trying to grab and squeeze, you know, trying to squeeze 11 into a 4-day weekend is a lot. 2 or 3 a day seems to be the most that most people can make work consistently.
And do they have like a tracker for you to know?
Nope.
So you're just like, you're like hoping this counts.
I'm keeping track of my stuff, making sure it all posts, but also like I'm doing them as award tickets.
Gotcha.
But it's not even like when I say hope it posts, like I'm not even actually running points on a lot of this stuff. So like it doesn't actually post to my account. I'm taking a lot of photos. I can prove I was there.
Yeah, I'd be keeping the boarding passes.
Given the number I haven't flown, just keeping a boarding pass isn't necessarily.
Yes.
Although I will say one of the people in one of the text chat groups I'm in about this was like, I just got an email mid-flight that my reservation was canceled while I'm on the plane. It sounds like it didn't scan right. They got offloaded somehow. So they were trying to sort figure out how to fix that. So.
Lovely. I'm going to quickly talk about, there was a post on Reddit, it was yesterday. We're recording this on August 24th. It was yesterday, August 23rd's flight from Newark to Hilton Head Island. And the person said that they were told that only 7 bags were loaded at the cargo hold on Newark to Hilton Head.
We actually know someone on this flight.
Do we? Was it, yeah. Was our buddy on that flight?
No. Someone from the other chat was on this flight.
Oh, interesting. I have to go read. So they loaded 7 bags, but I think, and then the person was like, why would they only load 7 bags? Well, there's a lot going on. So there's weather in near Hilton Head. Hilton Head's only a 5,000 foot runway. And it's a once a day E-175. So it looks like the flight held. So I'm guessing they loaded extra fuel. Slick runway means terrible conditions for braking, and you were full on passengers, and probably overhead bins were pretty full if they were doing the math. So 7 bags is not a lot, but I guess that tells you the performance of the E-175 on short runways.
Yeah, it was all weight and balance restricted is what they were told.
Yeah. Which is just wild, but people are like losing their minds on Reddit about this. So,
I mean, in some ways it has to suck. You're on your way to a vacation, most likely, and you don't have your crap.
Yep.
But the counterpoint is, it's really wise to go down there during hurricane season.
No, it's not. No. So, anything else you guys want to chat about?
Not for me.
Cool. All right. Thank you to our listeners for listening and joining us on the show. Leave a comment. You can blue sky us. We like to hear from you. And for Patreon subscribers, we're going to talk about Spirit, some non-window seats, Austin Airport, and some VRBO Vrbo booking bizarreness. So stick around for that. We'll talk to you later. Happy travels.
I was waiting for Boz.
No.
Bye, guys.
See ya.